And three more sessions, now this evening and tomorrow morning, and I believe we'll be able to finish the chapter. We're continuing, starting with 28. We will go to 34. Bhishma Dev is responding to Maharaj Yudhisthira's questions. The duties of the different varna ashrams. And based upon the different duties of varnas and ashrams, how he can perform his duties as king. But then Bhishma Dev described the occupational duties of different orders and statuses of life, citing circumstances from history, for he himself was well acquainted with the truth. So, the Puranic literature includes histories. That's what Purana means. And to illustrate how different orders of life and ashrams are to be executed, he cited the examples from scripture. So part of the a major part of the responsibility of a learned person is how to apply things. So it's one thing to have some book knowledge, but then the application of that knowledge in practical life is it requires realization, not just academic qualification. And that's what's being said about Bhishma. He was very capable of explaining how to apply things in practical ways, because he had this deep realization and full command of the scriptures, and he was explaining how to apply by various examples. Then comes a turning point in the whole chapter. While Bhishma Dev was describing occupational duties, the sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. This period is desired by mystics who die at their will. So that's this very special day, Makara Sankranti, when the sun starts to move in a northerly direction. That is, before Makara Sankranti, the sun is moving in a southerly direction. And you all took 8th grade science, so you all know what that means, right? No response. So, the movement of the sun in relation to the earth is called the ecliptic. So, here's the earth. And this half is the northern hemisphere. And when the sun is at the topmost part of its ecliptic path in the northern hemisphere, the day is of the longest duration and the night is of the shortest duration, because the sun's in the northern hemisphere and the earth is turning on an axis 23.5 degrees, and so the days are longest and the nights are shortest. Summer solstice comes towards the end of June. Then, from that date, the sun starts moving on its ecliptic path, I guess from your angle of vision, in a southerly direction, heading towards the equator. And it's moving towards the equator. It passes the equator at equinox, where the days and nights are of equal duration. Keeps moving in a southerly direction. Then the nights become longer, longest. at the southernmost part of the movement of the sun that's on its ecliptic path, and that's when the day is shortest and night is longest, Makara Sankranti. So we just observed it. January, what was the date? 14th, January 14th. And then it starts moving on its ecliptic plane on the northern direction, crosses the equator again, another equinox, up, to the summer solstice, then down. And so one year is marked by the movement of the sun as the sun is moving around the earth or in relation to the earth. 1 year. So there's this double, that the earth is moving around the sun and the sun is moving around the earth. Or in relation to the earth, from the perspective of the earth, the sun is moving around the earth once. It has to do with science, but it has to do with the axis of the earth is tilted. So the axis of the earth stays tilted while the sun is here. The earth is moving. If you look at, you know, from the way Copernicus looks at it, it's just relative. The axis is always like this. And so from the movement of the earth around the sun, you can look at it from the perspective of the sun moving in relation to the earth on the ecliptic plane. So according to Bhagavad Gita and according to the whole of the Vedic picture of things, when the sun is in its northerly direction, that is from Makara Sankranti going in the northerly direction, when the yogi leaves his body during that period of time, that's the path to the spiritual world is open. Whereas the souls that leave in the other suns in the southerly direction, the path is not open. So there are mystics, and Bhishma Dev is both a pure devotee and a mystic. He can leave his body at will. So he then shuts down the program of serving his grandchildren, the Pandavas, and he's ready to leave his body because everything, the sun is moving in the northerly direction, Krishna is standing before him, his duties are done. It's Hari Bol, back to Godhead. Now, devotees are not dependent upon what position the sun is in relation to the earth. So Bhishma Dev could have left at any time, but he chose that time. Now, a little chronology. When was Gita Jayanti this year? December? What was the date? How many? 16, something like that? 19th? Okay. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken before the Kurukshetra battle took place, right? And how many days was the Kurukshetra battle? How many? 18 days? So, add 18 to 19. What do you get? 37. There's 31 days in December, so 31 plus 6. So on January 6th, there's from January 6th until January 14th, approximately, because there's slight differentiations of things. That's how many days from when the Kurukshetra battle was over to when this scene is taking place. So it took place between roughly the 6th to the 14th. Is the Pandavas being the victors in the battle, were recognized as the emperors of the world. Because it's the Vedic process, when people die, the first duty is to take care of the dead. So domya and the funeral arrangements for those who are deceased. And meanwhile, Bhishma is just lying there on the battlefield, chanting Hare Krishna, waiting for, you know, the scene to take place. And he's just like biding time. So they had to take care of those duties. And then so then they're coming to the scene where Grandfather Bhishma is lying. And now the sun is moving into the northerly direction. All over India, this Makara Sankranti is a very special celebrated day. And Bhishma Dev celebrated in a really grand way. He went back to Godhead. So that's what this description is, the verses that we're going to be reading. So there's three remaining sections. Bhishma Dev prepares himself. He like shuts down his material program and just the spiritual program. Then the next section is he offers prayers to Krishna, and the final section is he gives up his body. That's what we have left. So this class, the evening class, and then tomorrow morning's class, and we're done. Thereupon, that man, Bhishma, who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings, and who fought on thousands of battlefields, and protected thousands of men, stopped speaking. And, being completely freed from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. Such a nice image. The sun is shining and Krishna is wearing yellow garments, and the sun is reflecting off his yellow garments and reflecting into Bhishma's eyes, glittering very brightly. The auspicious time has been calculated. So this is like the tortoise that extends his limbs and at will withdraws his limbs. So using that metaphor, Bhishma had the capacity to engage in devotional service, extend his senses, knowledge acquiring and active senses for the purpose of service to Krishna. He also had the capacity at will to withdraw them. Just like that. He's now deciding, I'm going to withdraw them. So it's not like his arms retracted within his body and he became like a pumpkin or something. But the subtle senses were withdrawn. The mind, the thinking, feeling, willing capacity, which was in devotional service, the thinking, feeling, willing capacity is in terms of practical activity. How to get from here to the mandir, how to whatever it is that we have to do. The mind is active, the senses are active in service. So he shut down his senses and fixed his mind just on Krishna. Now specifically the verse says that Krishna was showing his four-armed form, but Krishna normally is depicted having two-armed form. Just like when Arjuna asked Krishna, can you show me your universal form? He showed his universal form and he said, oh boy, take that form away, let me see your original form. And he showed his first his forearm, then his two-arm form. So we're customarily seeing Krishna in his two-arm form. Bhishma was seeing his forearm form. Now, how do we understand that? We understand that because of the disposition of devotion to the Supreme determines the form that Krishna shows to his devotee. Just like so many examples in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna showed to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya six-armed form. And sometimes to Murari Gupta, he showed his form as Varaha or Nrisingadeva, or sometimes his universal form. He showed his universal form to Advaitacharya, who wanted to see that. So he showed it to him. To Ramananda Roy, he showed his form of Radha and Krishna. According to the disposition of the devotee, Krishna discloses his form. So Bhishma Dev's disposition was Vaikuntha disposition. That is, he knew the Aishvarya, the opulences of the personality of Godhead. Although Krishna was appearing as the cousin of the Pandavas, Bhishma saw him as the Lord of the universe, forearmed. So Krishna showed his forearm form. In the purport, Prabhupada quotes 11 verses from the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is attaining the Supreme. How a yogi, when giving up his body in certain conditions, achieves different results. The principle is, whatever the mind is fixed on, or in italics, Prabhupada has written, the subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. So we'll read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, texts 5 through 15. The translation is slightly different than you find in Bhagavad Gita as it is, but the essence is there. And whoever at the time of death quits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will attain me without a doubt. He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and being transcendental is beyond this material nature. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows and in full devotion engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons learned in the Vedas who utter Omkar and who are great sages in the renounced order enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life air at the top of his head. One establishes himself in yoga. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. For one who remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Now, the emphasis that Prabhupada is making in the last paragraph is Bhishma didn't have to pay attention to all of this because he was a devotee. And that means a devotee gets Krishna's special protection or Krishna's special intervention. He, like Krishna, adjusts everything. And whatever is not auspicious, Krishna makes it auspicious. Whatever is a problem, Krishna removes the problem. He takes the devotee to him. Still, Bhishma Dev chose the auspicious time. And we're going to find in the very last section, he had he had capacities of a great yogi. So he was a great devotee and a great yogi. But most importantly, a great devotee. And the most important thing, which Bhishma already highlighted, was he was fixing his mind, his eyes, and his whole consciousness upon Krishna. So that is the next verse. By pure meditation, looking at Lord Krishna, he at once was freed from all material inauspiciousness. What does that mean? To be freed from all material inauspiciousness. Prabhupada explains in the purport, but the soul is originally pure. Consciousness is originally pure. The mind and senses are originally pure. But due to material contact, the consciousness becomes contaminated, the mind and senses become contaminated in contact with matter in the enjoying spirit. So when consciousness can be fully directed to Krishna, consciousness again becomes pure because Krishna is all pure. Really simple example that Prabhupada gives is the example of the sun. When the sun comes in contact with a dirty pond or a puddle of urine, Prabhupada gives that example. What happens? Does the sun become contaminated by that impure place? Or does the impure thing become purified by contact with the sun? The sun doesn't become contaminated. The impure place becomes purified. And so it is with this process of fixing the mind on Krishna. The mind becomes purified. That means all material contact and it's the agitations of material contact are gone when we simply bring the mind to Krishna. And so that's what Bhishma did. I mean, he was a devotee, so what contamination was there for Bhishma? So Prabhupada explains this. Just on the arrival of Lord Krishna, all material contamination was completely removed, and Bhishma Dev was thus able to be transcendentally situated by stopping the activities of the impure senses in collaboration with matter. The soul is originally pure and also the senses. By material contamination, the senses assume the role of imperfection and impurity. By revival of contact with the supreme pure, Lord Krishna, the senses again become free from material contaminations. Bhishma Dev's service was to have so many dealings with the state, the royal affairs of the government. And in such condition, there's unavoidable material contact. Now, when unmixed devotional service is there, that contact is purified. But still, just having those activities, it's there's tendencies when in material contact to stay attached in material contact. But Bhishma, so Bhishma withdrew his attention, withdrew his consciousness from those material activities and fixed his consciousness upon Krishna. In that way, all material inauspiciousness was gone. So now in that state, the next section is Bhishma offers prayers. And they're very, very beautiful prayers. He begins, "Let me now invest my thinking, feeling, will, and willing, which were so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties, in the all-powerful Lord Sri Krishna. He is always self-satisfied, but sometimes being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world, although from him only the material world is created." What's he saying here? Krishna doesn't come because someone's telling, "Okay, Krishna, it's time for your appearance in this world. You better get it together. The train's about to pull out. Oh, okay. You better go appear in the material world. I got my duty." Krishna has, there's nothing for him to do. He's self-satisfied. He creates this place, but for the satisfaction of his devotees who are in this material world, and to deliver the non-devotees, Krishna comes. He doesn't need to come. He has scheduled incarnations, but no one's checking up on him and saying, "Okay, Krishna, it says here on the schedule that you're supposed to appear, so..." There's no reason other than Krishna's affection for his devotees and his compassion for those who have gone astray. So this is our Mahajan grandfather Bhishma elucidating the glories of Krishna, and he's happy to do so. There's nothing he likes more than speaking about Krishna. So he's just going to let it rip. This is it. This is his last blast, glorifying Krishna. Because Bhishma was a statesman, the head of the Kuru dynasty, a great general and the leader of Kshatriyas, his mind was strewn over so many subjects, and his thinking, feeling, and willing were engaged in different matters. But now, in order to achieve pure devotional service, he wanted to invest all powers of thinking, feeling, and willing entirely in the Supreme Being, Lord Krishna. So his subtle senses are withdrawn, and his mind, in its purified state, is just glorifying Krishna. Prabhupada writes, "Pure devotees of the Lord have no desire other than the service of the Lord, and therefore they are called sattvata. The Lord is the chief among such sattvatas. Bhishma Dev, therefore, had no other desires." Very important. Next sentence. "Unless one is purified from all sorts of material desires, the Lord does not become one's leader." Desires cannot be wiped out. They only have to be purified. Anyabhilashata shunyam jnana karma janapratam. Another way of saying the same thing. Bhishma Dev has already stated, "I have unflinching devotion to Krishna. Because of that, Krishna has come. And now I'm going to take this opportunity and glorify him. He is our master. And the master is kind to his servants. He's come. He's the Lord of the Sattvatas. The Sattvatas are those that have no other desire but the Lord. It's just like a perfect combination. They have no other desire but to serve Krishna. Krishna is happy to be their Lord and Master. But then it works the other way around. Those that have other desires, they don't make it their business to make the Lord of the Sattvatas their Lord. Because they've got other desires, and so they have other shelters, other places where they go to satisfy their desires. They still have masters, so if there's another way of saying what I just said is if there's unsteadiness in devotional service, the stage of anishtata bhakti is there because we have other desires. And though these questions that devotees like to have, the how-to question, how to become fixed in devotional service, like this other question, how to make advancement in devotional service, take those other desires, find a nice receptacle, throw them in, and you drop a match in, burn it. Or go to a sacred river and take your load of other desires and throw them in the river. And watch them float downstream. And don't go jump in the water and rescue them. Just let them go. And they're gone. And if we're not prepared to do that, then we're not going to become fixed in devotional service. We're going to have this mixed in devotional service, and sometimes this and sometimes that, sometimes this, sometimes that, sometimes this, sometimes that. We're all too familiar with that territory, but that the reason for that unsteadiness is we have other desires, and that's the material condition. Material condition is desires apart from Krishna, so that's why there's unsteadiness. If we want steadiness, take those other desires that are not in relation to Krishna and dump them. Prabhupada explained, generally because people are attached to those other desires, the process of devotional service is gradual. Once Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's answer was less than a second. And in that less than a second, just two things have to happen. The product of mental speculation, the knowledge acquired through mental speculation, has to be eliminated. And the happiness, anticipating happiness through sense gratification, has to be abandoned. And Prabhupada said, generally people are attached to these two things, and so the process is gradual. How long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Less than a second. So how swiftly we advance in Krishna consciousness has so much to do with our willingness to drop our baggage and just take shelter of Krishna. Text 33. Krishna, Sri Krishna, is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of a tamal tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruitive results. So two things. Bhishma Dev is, the first verse is describing Krishna's position. Second verse, he's getting very specific about Krishna's features. his face, his cloth, his ornaments, sandalwood paste decorating Krishna's face. The next verse gets even more specific. And by this second part is, by this meditation, one can become free from the desire for fruitive results. And my dear devotees, the desire for fruitive results is very difficult to give up. Even in devotional service, we have desires for fruitive results. We have our expectations. I'm investing this, and I expect that. I've got my contract with Krishna. It says right here, I do this, and you do that. And if Krishna doesn't do that, I'm not sure I'm going to do this, because I've got my fruitive intentions. So what's devotional service without fruitive intentions? Krishna, you can do with me whatever you like. Unconditional, I'm your servant. Serve, 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 and serve. And you can do what you like. Unconditional service. The fact of the matter is, we're constitutionally servants, and we're serving Krishna anyways, and everything's on Krishna's terms anyways. That's just reality. So if we just recognize reality, I'll just serve Krishna. And if one approaches Krishna in that mood, just leave Krishna aside, just any ordinary person, Joe Smith, you know, American name. So just anybody. And let somebody approach Joe Smith, and they just serve him and 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 serve him. What's that going to do to Joe Smith? He's going to think, wow, this person is really amazing. His affection for that person is going to go like that, isn't it? And that's just Joe Smith. What to speak of Lord Sri Krishna? If one approaches Lord Sri Krishna, just serving Krishna, serving Krishna, serving Krishna, serving Krishna, unconditionally serving Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's Krishna going to do? He's not a stone. He's a supreme loving person. Whatever it is that one requires, Krishna will provide that. It's just common sense. Plus, Krishna says it, he confirms it in Bhagavad Gita. To those who are constantly engaged in my devotional service, always absorbed in thinking of me and serving me, I provide what they have and preserve what they lack. Yogakshema Vahamyam. It's only natural. It shouldn't be a big surprise. Bhishmadeva knows that's Krishna's nature. So he's been his unalloyed devotee for all this time, and he has all these realizations about Krishna's reciprocation with that unalloyed devotion. My dear devotees, we have access to the same realization, proportionate to how we present ourselves and submit ourselves to Krishna. The thing that stands in the way is, we got this big, pile of rocks on our shoulder. And that's called fruitive intention. And we're always have this, this mentality that I'll do this for Krishna and I have my expectations back. Or a devotee, I'll do this for a devotee and I have my expectations back. And it's like a stain that doesn't go away. It's very, very... It's contact with the mode of passion. That's where fruitive intention comes. I want to enjoy apart from Krishna. That's fruit of, that's contact with the mode of passion. And with it comes fruit of intention. This anticipation that I want my kickback. I want the fruit of my work. Otherwise, I'm not going to play. I'm going to go home. You guys can play with what I'm going to go home. I don't like the way you play with what. I have my expectations. It's very strong. Very, very, very strong. The Bhishma Dev, this great devotee Bhishma Dev, is praying to Krishna, may I not desire fruitive results. Devotees, we need to pray like that too. If Bhishma Dev needs to pray like that, we need to pray like that. We follow his example. Krishna, please take away this I want to enjoy apart from you tendency, because it's very deep. I want to serve you. At the same time I want to serve you, I want to not serve you. I want to enjoy apart from you. And it just it doesn't go together. It's like Prabhupada saying, trying to ignite a fire and pouring water on the fire. They go ill together. You have to stop pouring water on the fire if you want to start the fire. That's really easy to understand. So same, fruit of intention. In the realm of devotional service, it extinguishes the spirit, the fire of devotion. So we should, saying the same thing the opposite way is, to take up devotional service in the spirit of devotion, it's without expectation. Just serve Krishna. Go the other way. Please remove my fruit of intentions. Please just engage me in your devotional service. Please take away fruit of intention. Jnana karma jnavratam. Anukuyena Krishna Anushilana Bhakti Rutana. On the battlefield, text 34. On the battlefield where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship, the flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hooves of the horses, and because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. All these decorations, intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows, were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go unto Sri Krishna. I like this verse a lot. The poetry, the imagery, and the bhav are all very wonderful. Bhishma Dev knows he's going to give up his body. Krishna standing right before him. He knows why Krishna has come standing before him. Krishna is showing his forearm form. What does the mind of Bhishma Dev go to? The battlefield. In his mind, he's picturing what he saw, you know, before the arrows riddled him. He saw Krishna taking the broken chariot wheel of Arjuna, raised in the air, broken wheel. Krishna has Sudarshan Chakra, he doesn't need a wheel. But, you know, the drama of the thing. Krishna has made a promise, I will not fight. Ha ha! Krishna broke his promise. Why did Krishna break his promise? To uphold the promise of Bhishma. What was the... So, this is very nice. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya consoled Gadadhar Pandit. When Gadadhar Pandit wanted to travel with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to go to Vrindavan, because Gadadhar Pandit couldn't stand the feeling of separation from Lord Chaitanya, he violated his Kshetra Sannyas and his vow to continue worshipping the Gopinath deity, and he went with Lord Chaitanya against Lord Chaitanya's wish. And Gadadhar Pandit doesn't do anything against Lord Chaitanya's wish. His manner is very submissive and mild and meek. He completely kicked that out. I'm going. And then you don't want me to travel with you? I won't travel with you. I'll travel separately from you. We just happen to be going the same direction, that's all. So Lord Chaitanya called him and said, Gadadhar Pandit, if you at all want to please me, go back. You should be satisfied. You broke your two vows, okay. Now it's you and me. Your vows are broken. It's you and me. Go back. It's direct instruction like that. Lord Chaitanya got on the boat to cross the river, and Gadadhar Pandit just watched him go and fell to the ground unconscious. Lord Chaitanya said to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, go pacify Gadadhar Pandit and make sure he goes back to Puri. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya picked up Gadadhar Pandit, held him in his lap like a father holds a child, and says, Gadadhar, Lord Chaitanya has love for you like Krishna had love for Bhishma Dev. Krishna placed the promise of Bhishma Dev above his own promise. That's how much love that Krishna had for Bhishma Dev. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he feels attachment for you as much as you feel for him. But he placed his attachment for you subordinate to your promise. Your promise was Kshetra Sannyas. He wants you to keep that. Go back. He's subordinating his desire for your promise. And this is what Krishna has done with Bhishma. I will not fight. All right? Krishna will break his promise in order to uphold my promise. My promise is that either Krishna will break his promise or I'll kill Arjuna, his best friend. And I can do it. And Krishna knows it. So Bhishma's sending arrows. Krishna's catching this arrow, catching that arrow. Arjuna's behind Krishna thinking, oh no, Krishna's taking those arrows that are intended for me, piercing the body of Krishna. Oh, terrible. Krishna's, another arrow, another arrow. In the purport, Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur, a great acharya and devotee in the humor of conjugal love of the Lord, remarks very, very saliently in this regard. He says that the wounds created on the body of the Lord by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev were as pleasing to the Lord as the biting of a fiancé who bites the body of the Lord directly by a strong sense of sex desire. Such biting by the opposite sex is never taken as a sign of enmity, even if there is a wound on the body. Bhaktisiddhanta speaks about this, and he says, you know, what's the business of a sannyasi speaking about this subject matter? But it's appropriate. The lover and beloved, and the lover bites the beloved, and the beloved thinks, oh, how nice. Somebody else bites them, forget it, you know, sako. punch you out. But the lover bites the beloved. Oh, how nice. So the arrows of Bhishma, Krishna's, it's like the biting of the beloved by the lover. Krishna's not feeling pain, Krishna's feeling joy. Krishna, above, Prabhupada explains, there's no question of pain. The body of Krishna is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. For even for the soul cannot be pierced by any weapon, moistened by water, withered by the wind. So it's Leela. It's Leela. Grandfather Bhishma, what is the rasa that Grandfather Bhishma has with Krishna? Dasya rasa. He's the servant. His predominant mood is servant of the master. And here's the servant of the master firing arrows at him. So the science of rasa says there's 5 primary and 7 secondary rasas. The secondary rasa that's active here is chivalrous. You know this from Nectar Devotion. There's 7 secondary rasas. Chivalry is one of them. So Bhishma Dev is being inspired. The Dasya is eclipsed by chivalry. He's firing arrows. Krishna is taking the arrows. Then Grandfather Bhishma makes a final surge. I'm going to get Arjun. He's fixing the chariot. Now is my chance to get him. Krishna sees Bhishma charging like that. He breaks his vow. He picks up the chariot wheel. The upper garment, you've seen pictures, but the upper garment, Krishna's moving at such speed, the upper garment is flowing in the wind. His hair is flowing in the wind. His body is ashen because of the hooves, the dust from the battlefield. Beads of perspiration are coming. There's wounds of blood on his body, and Krishna is ready to smash Bhishma Dev. Ah! Then the conch blows. Boop! The end of the day, fighting's over. That's Grandfather Bhishma's meditation. He's about to die. He's fixing his mind in that chivalrous mood. Krishna's standing before him, and he's fixing his mind on this battlefield scene. It's the exchange of love in such an intense way. Bhishma loves to see how Krishna will protect his devotee, Arjun, and protect his vow and place Krishna's own position below that. Oh, Krishna, so wonderful. He's leaving his body in this condition of ecstatic expression of devotion. Prabhupada writes that Bhishma Dev's piercing of the body of Lord Krishna is a sort of bewildering problem for the non-devotee atheist. But those who are devotees or liberated souls are not bewildered. Hey, what's going on? Krishna's getting arrows in his body and there's blood. What's going on? Krishna, we know from the Isha-Upanishad, The absolute truth has no veins, right? Specifically. So where's the blood coming from? It's Leela. Krishna doesn't have to have veins to produce blood. Krishna produces everything. It's Leela. And if one doesn't accept that Krishna is the absolute truth, the whole description of Krishna is bewildering. Or say it the way Jiva Goswami says it. If one does not accept the absolute truth is possessed of inconceivable potencies, there's no question of understanding the absolute truth. Now the other way around. As soon as you accept the absolute truth has inconceivable potencies, then you can understand the personality of Godhead. Go back the other way. The absolute truth cannot have something. Then how's the absolute truth absolute? As soon as you start can't this, can't that, can't this, can't that, you're just like philosophically neutering God or the absolute truth. The absolute truth can have and does have everything within our conception and beyond our conception. That's the absolute truth. Has to. Otherwise, it's something that's conceivable within the mind, but the absolute is inconceivable. The absolute truth must have inconceivable potencies. Krishna does have inconceivable potencies, and with those inconceivable potencies, he does inconceivable things. What's the purpose behind those inconceivable things? Loving exchanges with his devotees. And simultaneously bewildering the minds of those who are non-devotees. Same time, he does both things. So the devotees look at those situations and think, how wonderful is Krishna? Like the cowherd boys, at the end of the day, our acharyas describe, every day they'd go back and tell their families, wow, what did Krishna do today? He's so wonderful. And they would all enjoy hearing what Krishna did today. They weren't thinking, oh, he must be God. They were just thinking, oh, Krishna is so wonderful. Come sit down and have your meal. Tell us more about Krishna. They would do their duties, but glorifying Krishna, appreciating Krishna, was at the heart of Braja life. Bhishma Dev is outside of Braja, but he understands the inconceivable potencies of Krishna, and he has this really amazing relationship with Krishna. Think about it. A servant, Dasya Rasa, pure devotee, Dasya Rasa, firing arrows, piercing the body of your master, forcing him to break his vow, and getting great delight when he does it. Smash him. It's amazing. Bhishma Dev's relationship with Krishna is really amazing. Of all the scenes and all the exchanges and all the things that he could fix his mind upon, this is at the top. Krishna charging with the broken wheel of Arjuna's chariot ready to smash him. One more verse. In obedience to the command of his friend Lord Sri Krishna, entered the arena of the battlefield of Kurukshetra between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana, and while there he shortened the lifespan of the opposite party by his merciful glance. This was done simply by his looking at the enemy. Let my mind be fixed upon that, Krishna. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, the Lord diminished the duration of life of the opposite party by his merciful glance. It is said that all the fighters who assembled there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained the salvation by personally seeing the Lord at the time of death. Therefore, his diminishing the duration of life of Arjuna's enemy does not mean that he was partial to the cause of Arjuna. Factually, he was merciful to the opposite party because they would not have attained salvation by dying at home in the ordinary course of life. Here was a chance to see the Lord at the time of death and thus attain salvation from material life. So, by his taking the side of Arjun in a fight between Arjun and the Kauravas, Krishna's glance is very powerful. Krishna's glance is very powerful. So many nice examples of Krishna's glancing. By his glancing at the queens of Dwarka as he was entering into Dwarka, because the the ladies stood up on the rooftops because of their shyness, but they could also have the advantage of seeing Krishna perfectly. So as they were looking at Krishna, Krishna just glanced at them, and by his glancing at them, the form of Krishna entered into the eyes and into the hearts of the damsels, and they were as satisfied as if they had embraced Krishna just by his glance. By his glance, Ramachandra boiled the whole ocean. Powerful glance. When Krishna was seeing the gopis just out of the corner of his eye, the glance of Krishna would catch the forms of the gopis, and they would be thrilled to no end. Just the sidelong glance of Krishna. With Krishna's glance, Krishna can accept the offerings that we bring before him. Ordinary persons can't eat with their eyes or with their ears, but Krishna can. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. And similarly with Krishna's glance, just glancing over the other armies, finished. Because he's on the side of Arjuna. And he's empowered Arjuna to be victorious, but even before the fighting begins, their duration of life has been shortened by Krishna's glance. Very, very powerful. So, Bhishma's prayer, let my mind be fixed upon that person, Krishna. So a few more prayers this evening, and then Bhishma's parting. There were some questions from this morning. Question is, Bhishma Dev, on his final moments of life, was praying to Krishna to fix his mind. But in my stage, if some little trouble comes, internal or external, at once I forget Krishna, and a question comes. Why would Krishna want, the grammar is not so good, but why would Krishna want to have anything to do with me, basically? What to do? Well, one thing is I've been emphasizing this a lot, and I encourage you to all move in this direction. Recognize that Krishna is very loving. Even ordinary beings have the capacity for love. And in the capacity for love, it's just even mode of goodness that there's forgiveness. If someone does something that's not nice, a forgiving person can overlook that something that's not nice and still have affection for that other person. What to speak of that someone is trying and trying, and they may not be accomplishing everything, but they're trying very sincerely. That's naturally attractive. Or something else. Someone is they're struggling with a circumstance of life, but you know the heart of that individual is very sincere. You can easily look beyond the struggling that they're undergoing and how they might not be so attentive to this thing and that thing, and you see the sincere desire of the individual. The real spiritual quality, the soul. The Krishna can see like that in us. If others can see, certainly Krishna can see. Krishna is very loving. So one response to this question is recognize that Krishna is very loving. We're not on, Krishna knows, and we know, we're not on Bhishma Dev's platform. We're inspired by Bhishma Dev's example, but we're not on that platform. Krishna sees what our condition of heart is. We're inspired by that. He'll help us. He's loving. It's nice. It's one of the fundamental things about bhakti that differentiates bhakti from any other form of yoga practice. All the other forms of yoga practice are entirely dependent upon the qualification of the performer, the effort the performer makes and the qualifications they bring to the table. And bhakti doesn't depend upon that. It depends upon sincerity. The genuine desire to connect with Krishna. Yes, we must make some effort, but it's the genuine desire to connect with Krishna. And even if it's only a little bit, like Bhishma's, please fix my mind completely upon you. So that may not be our number one priority prayer. But to whatever degree we have that inclination, Krishna sees it and he encourages it. That's the kind of master that Krishna is. So in other words, we may be disqualified a lot, but Krishna is very kind. So that's how to deal with this. Prahlad Maharaj, when he goes before Lord Nrisimhadev to offer his prayers, his first thing is he says, I don't have any qualification to offer you prayers. I have disqualification. I'm born a demoniac family. I have demoniac blood coursing through my veins. If I pray for anything, it's going to be for something bad. But I know that you're very merciful. And whatever it is that I bring forward and offer to, by your merciful nature, you will accept. So here goes. Because you're merciful. Not our qualification, it's Krishna's merciful nature. And he'll help us go the next step, the next step, the next step, the next. So that's faith. A little faith in what Krishna really is, the kind of person Krishna really is, we can keep going. Following the example of great devotees like Bhishma Dev that inspire us. Okay. How to become submissive towards authorities? I'm feeling that they are giving me everything, but from my side, I'm not putting my sincere efforts. I'm feeling very guilty. Like Krishna, who is very loving, authorities or those representing Krishna are also with not the same fullness as Krishna, but loving capacity. And so, same answer, recognizing Krishna's unlimited loving capacity and your authority's loving capacity, acknowledge that in your heart and express it in your words and actions. If it's in your heart, it will come out in your words and actions, however limitedly or less than you might want it to be. Following the question answer section from this morning, it's recognized that it's very important to make that connection with your authorities, a real, tangible connection with your spiritual authorities. It's something that each one of us needs to do. So you make the extra effort to do so. And they're very, by nature, a spiritually qualified person is very tolerant, very patient, very loving, and will help you make little steps, little baby steps, going towards what spiritual progress means. Okay, so any other questions? Want to? Okay. Hearing about that the exalted devotees gives an inspiration to acquire their quality, but when we try to follow their instruction, we fail again and again. How to follow properly? Just keep trying. Prabhupada gives the example in Nectar Devotion that a child has walking propensity. So how does the walking propensity of the child come out? The child takes a few steps and then they get up again and take a few steps and a few more steps, and however long it takes, just by continuing to make those efforts, the walking propensity comes out in fullness. The next thing you know, the little kid's running around and won't stop. So that phase, that period of learning how to walk when walking propensity is there, may be a little troublesome. The child may, you know, tumble to the ground and start crying, and mother comes along and picks up the child and pats the child and stops crying, and then he sits down and starts to walk again, falls down. So as there's that learning phase. So it's similarly, propensities in devotion are innate within all souls, and if we just follow the standard process, that serving propensity comes out, and we may serve imperfectly in a variety of ways in our practicing stage, but with faith, just continue. And those who are helping you in spiritual life, just like parents may take a little hand of the child, and as the child takes a couple of steps, they're helping them take a couple of steps, and then still the child will tumble and fall. But, you know, the parents are with the child. That's their affection to do that. It's not a problem for the parents to help their child learn to walk. It's part of their loving relationship with the child. Same, it's part of the position of someone who is helping to train others in Krishna consciousness. They expect it's not going to be perfect the first time or second time or the 100th time. But by practice, then propensity comes out. I think I answered that question already. You said in the lecture that learning Krishna consciousness depends upon our willing to drop our baggage. Okay. Is sincere devotion Is sincere devotion not very difficult to accomplish in my stage of not having such a strong desire? What shall I take strength from my daily sadhana? I think I answered this one also. There's something that each one of us just look inwardly and say, when I fill in the blank, I feel strength. So our attraction for the whole of devotional service may be less than strong or less than what we would want it to be. You start somewhere. We all have to start with something, and something we get strength from. And there are basic things from which we can expect to derive strength from. Like happiness in the mode of goodness, according to Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning seems like poison. In the end, it becomes nectar. So if our contact, long contact with material existence, seems I don't have attraction, some amount of faith is necessary to go forward in devotional service. With faith that this will purify my existence, even there may not be attraction and taste, I have faith in the process. Person is saying that I mentioned that it's important to perform our devotional practices from the heart or with feeling, but I just do things mechanically. What to do? Just understand the instruction and apply the instruction. You have to do, if all there is mechanically, then you do mechanically. But that's not going to inspire for very long. So understand what the instruction is and try to apply the instruction. Same. How to cultivate real, genuine feelings. This question is like number five, or the top five of the hit parade. On the Swami circuit. When will real feelings of devotion come? When will I take up chanting and it not be mechanical? And, you know, a big part of that is when we want it to. Meaning, when we really want a relationship with Krishna, Krishna's ready. But if what we really want is a bargain with Krishna, then it's mechanical. Krishna is a person. And Krishna consciousness is all about having a relationship with Krishna. If we want a relationship with Krishna, Krishna is ready. There's no, like, big delay. Krishna's ready. Krishna's been waiting unlimited amounts of time. And so we have the means. In italics, Prabhupada is putting Krishna the person in his purports. So, read Srimad Bhagavatam. That's something I like. Read Srimad Bhagavatam and discuss Srimad Bhagavatam with others, and the personality of Godhead, the personal exchanges that Krishna has with his devotees, it just comes bursting out. When you appreciate who Krishna is, it's very easy to love him. In the association of devotees, I sometimes try to imitate them. and sometimes induce in myself their qualities, but often it leads to failure or frustration. I don't see what the question is. This is like a statement of confession. So, what's the question? Is this your question? What's the question? What's the question, though? Follow an example. If there's something that inspires you, don't imitate, but follow the example. That's the prescription that we have. Don't imitate, follow the example. And if you follow the example, that it's not mechanical, it's devotional. And it's satisfying. Then you'll know at least I'm striving by right means, using Krishna's language. I'm striving by right means. It's like all around is darkness, and over there there's a light off in the distance. And I see the light. So let me just move towards the light. I know if I just keep moving towards the light, I'll get there. So there's the example. I'm not there, I'm way over here. Let me just move towards that. Follow, not imitate. And it works. The light starts to get brighter. Hey, I'm getting closer. I'm still not there yet. I'm getting closer. So follow the example, not imitate. Anything else?
You said in Jagannath Puri that advancement in Krishna consciousness depends upon mercy, and mercy depends upon one's faith in the process. Can you just explain it?
Well, did you hear in the back the question? In Puri, I said that advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon mercy. And receiving mercy is depending upon faith in the process. Can I explain that? Expand that idea. Got it? Okay. Well, advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon two things: mercy and effort. But if we make effort without being tuned in to the necessity of mercy, our effort is not going to bear fruit. We must receive mercy if we're going to advance in the path of spiritual life. But how can... So, now I'll acknowledge that I need to have faith. Excuse me, I need to get mercy. But like, you know, all these how-to questions. So much of the how-to questions is, it's right in front of you, just pick it up. So, if there's... I'll pick it up if I have faith. So what's faith? What's this thing called faith? We have a nice purport in Bhagavad Gita where The definition of faith is given from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's unflinching trust in something sublime, such that if I can achieve this one something, other desirable somethings will follow. That's faith. Shraddha Shabde Vishvas Kahi Sudridha Nishchaya. If I can achieve this one thing, whatever other desirable things, they'll follow. So I can place faith in this thing. That faith is faith in the process. That is, I can connect with Krishna through the medium of bhakti. And bhakti is not just behaviors. Bhakti is bhakti. Bhakti is the devotion that we carry in our hearts, and we do the rules and regulations of that bhakti, vaidhi sadhana. But it's bhakti. Bhakti is the essence. So I can connect with Krishna through the medium of devotional service. If I have faith, then I trust in the fact that Krishna is real, the process of devotional service is real, the mercy of Krishna will come through the medium of that devotional service. So now we'll go back to that in-between place. Okay, I've heard that I must make some effort, but I have to get some mercy. There are a lot of people in the world that may have that idea, I've got to get mercy. But they don't have the medium of devotional service. We have that medium of devotional service because we're in association of bhaktas. We're carrying bhakti and, you know, we have the opportunity for service. How much faith do we have? That's the medium to get Krishna's mercy. That's the message. Last question. Someone here? Each living entity has an eternal relationship with Krishna. I think of it like this. Like every seed, you know, within the seed is the potential of a particular species of plant or tree within the seed. Let's say, you know, there's marigolds, very common. So every marigold does not look the same, but there's a species. Each seed has a particular, in its mature state, has a particular color and size and how many leaves and what shape they're in and all that stuff. So every living entity has an eternal relationship with Krishna. It's unique. There's categories, 5 main categories. But each one's unique. So how does it work? The permutations, combinations, it's eternal, it's Krishna's arrangement. We have, you and I and every living entity has an eternal relationship with Krishna. That's been covered. The process of uncovering is the process of bhakti. And when it's like taking the seed and planting the seed and watering and putting sunlight, the seed sprouts and it comes out. I'm like this. And the other one is I'm like that. Each is unique. It's within the seed. It's already there. Hmm? certain process of bhakti brings it out. And the variegatedness of Krishna is unlimited, and so there's, how many varieties are there of the permutations, combinations? Unlimited. All by Krishna's arrangement for his pleasure. Hari Bol. And Krishna is the nurturer of that through the medium of his internal potency. Just like water and sunlight nurtures the seed to sprout and grow. It's 11:30. So I want to end. Remember your questions, and we'll cover them this evening. Is that okay? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.